Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast, our first show for the 2021 season. Boy, we've got a blockbuster here for you tonight. This is Dr. John Stamey, and I am sitting here in a cooling off Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I think it's going to get cold tonight. We'll just have to see, but it's always good to be in the sun fun capital of the universe. So it's just great to be here with my friends, and we're going to have a spectacular scary cast tonight. Our hosts for the evening include, first of all, from Emerald Isle, North Carolina, Papa Stroh, the Maestro of Wrestling. How are you doing, Papa Stroh?
Great to be here. Yeah, rub it in about Myrtle Beach. All right. Yeah, okay.
It's going to be freezing.
Keep rubbing it in there. Little salt for the wound there, buddy.
Okay. All right. And our man from Hollywood, Devin Tate, how are you doing on this New Year's show? Devin Tate, you appear to be here. Are you not? We'll fix that. The Amazing Velvet from I had to think there a minute. Amazing Velvet from none other than beautiful Ravenel, South Carolina, just out there near Charleston. How are you doing tonight, Amazing Velvet?
I am doing wonderful, thank you. Thank you for asking.
Hey well, Velvet, you know a secret?
You know a secret?
You're amazing. What? Just wanted to let you know. Anytime.
Thank you, sir. I love you, too.
I love you, too.
All right. Now I'm going to reintroduce our man from Hollywood, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight?
Hey. I'm great, Dr. John. So happy to be kicking off the new year with you all here.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a blast. Now, Robin has a hall pass. She has a car problem, and she is at CarMax getting it fixed. So she either will or will not be with us. But we still wish the Queen of Scary Cast all the best. And we have our favorite guest.
I used to watch that show, Hall Pass. That was a good show.
Was it?
Remember Hall Pass, like back in the day? The comedy show, Hall Pass? That was awesome.
I don't remember that.
Oh, I know what I'm thinking of. Kids in the Hall. That's it. Kids in the Hall.
Kids in the Hall. Oh, yeah, the British show. It was spectacular.
Yes.
It really was. Yeah.
Well, Kids in the Hall.
Yeah. All right, our favorite guest on our panel from Camden, South Carolina, the one, the only, Dr. Trey Donaway. Dr. Trey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine, John. Happy New Year to all of you.
Thank you.
Happy New Year, Doctor.
Well, I'll tell you what, we have confidence that you're going to live longer. Because the rumor mill has it that you might be getting or might have had a COVID vaccine.
Yes. I had my COVID vaccine. It was the first half. The second half is due in about 3 weeks because I work in a nursing home once a week. I'm a physician for the nursing home. I'm the medical director. So the nursing home got their vaccines last week. And so far, no one's grown an extra appendage or an ear, or everybody's done fine. Nobody died within minutes of getting the vaccine. And other than a little sore arm from getting a needle stick, it's pretty much unchanged.
We are glad you're here, and you're halfway of being here with us for a long time. So that's great. Otherwise, who would I get to call up and ask about COVID? I mean, you're my information bureau is what you are.
Yeah,
I'm the
COVID pipeline for you,
And you, pardon me. What did you
say? I'm your COVID hotline.
You certainly are. As I'm trying to figure out when to have some events, and so I appreciate your sage advice and wisdom, I'll tell you that. But anyway, we're glad to have you here. Tonight we have one of my favorite guests. He is from the world capital of UFOism. That's not a word, but it's one I made up for tonight. He is from Roswell, New Mexico. He is an esteemed, well-published author. I love his books. I'm on, I think, book number five but I still keep going back to Tall Tales and Half Truths of Billy the Kid. That's just such a great book, and we've got there's so much in it. And as I work with William H. Cox II, who portrayed Billy the Kid in early 1990s and did such a good job, they told him that he was obviously shooting cattle and he needed to leave. So it sounds like he was treated just like Billy. But anyway, here he is, the one and only John LeMay. And good evening, John. How are you doing out there in Roswell?
I'm doing well. And I just want to say Happy New Year from Roswell, New Mexico. And the aliens send their apologies for not appearing in the 2020 season finale. They were supposed to pop out, but the writers decided 2020 was just crazy enough, and they decided to write the aliens into 2021.
The way that mankind's been acting, I don't blame them one bit.
Yeah, and that's as jokey as it sounds, that COVID relief bill has something in there about a UFO disclosure, and that big, whatever it was, 5,000-page bill, there's some minor UFO disclosure detail on that. Somebody made me aware of that the other day, and I probably won't amount to much. Who knows, but we'll see.
Well, John, can you please send me an excerpt of that? I would love to put that on ScaryCast. I think our fans
absolutely
would really enjoy it.
One of my readers sent that to me over Facebook Messenger, so I just need to find it, and I'll shoot that to you.
Well, thank you very much. That would be greatly appreciated. So tonight we're going to talk about perhaps one of the greatest topics in all ScaryCast history. I would say this now puts Kathy Wood Towner down to second place, and this puts the Flat Earth down to third place. And I think this is now going to be the number one ScaryCast episode of all time. It is entitled Cowboys and Cryptids. So, John, start the conversation. I can't wait.
Well, I'm still going to start it with the aliens. It kind of still dates to the aliens, even though we're talking about cryptids and dinosaurs. 2011, my co-author and I, Noe Torres, wrote the book The Real Cowboys and Aliens, which pulled out a bunch of old, authentic newspaper articles from the late 1800s, early 1900s about cowboys and pioneers who saw UFOs and aliens. And, you know, the book did pretty well, and I had been thinking about doing a sequel on my own about, instead of aliens, there was also a lot of newspaper articles. These are real articles. They're not hoaxes. I mean, the stories could be hoaxes, but, you know, I mean, the articles are real. They were actually printed. And they were about cowboys and pioneers who claimed that they saw dinosaurs. Live dinosaurs.
Okay.
And when Dr. John says cryptids, you know, the reason for that is the idea of remnant dinosaurs or dinosaurs that didn't go extinct, they're often linked in with cryptozoology, and so that's why we also bring up the term cryptids.
Right. Well, that's true. All right, so give us a little background here. This is going to be exciting.
Well, the most famous cowboys and dinosaurs encounter, wouldn't you know, actually took place in the desert outside of Tombstone, Arizona, of all places, you know, where the famous Wyatt Earp shootout at the OK Corral happened.
How fitting a name, right?
Yeah.
Tombstone.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Tombstone, their newspaper was called the Tombstone Epitaph. And they ran a story in 1890 claiming that two cowboys riding out in the Huachuca Desert saw a pterodactyl struggling to get off the ground out in the desert. So they shot it and they killed it. And the article ended by claiming that the cowboys were going to drag the carcass back to Tombstone. And unfortunately, that's the only article that was ever published. There were no follow-up articles saying whether or not they brought the body back to town. And, you know, again, people can claim it was all a hoax. But the weird thing is there were a lot of people. We're kind of too far removed now from 1890. But probably in the early 1900s up until the 1950s and 1960s, there was a slew of people who claimed that they saw a tintype of some cowboys who had basically a big giant bird monster, a pterodactyl, strung up dead on a barn wall. And again, lots and lots of people claimed that they had seen this photograph, and it was nicknamed the Thunderbird photograph because, you know, the Thunderbird is a Native American legend that some people think might refer to a pterodactyl. But let's see, I think one of the most famous people to supposedly possess this photograph was Ivan T. Sanderson, the famous naturalist. Does anybody remember that name, Ivan Sanderson?
I do.
Okay, good.
I don't.
Yeah, he was prevalent kind of in the 1960s, and he was on, you know, like the Tonight Show with animals and stuff like that. So, but it was just people were always really obsessed with finding this photograph, and it was kind of uncanny how the photograph would disappear. It was almost like evidence pertaining to the Roswell UFO crash, you know, that people would claim to have, and then it would disappear. So definitely the so-called Tombstone Thunderbird is probably the most famous cowboy dinosaur encounter.
Wow.
All right, so now approximately what year was all that?
Yeah, 1890. Yeah, 1890.
It was a busy decade, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yep.
I mean, you got my favorite. I don't know if you want to briefly mention this or not, but my absolute favorite story from 1896 that could not have been a manned flying plane or anything like that because it took place 6 years before the six, 7 years before the Wright brothers. Do you mind mentioning that in the 1890s, sir?
No. So it was 1897. There was the Aurora, Texas UFO crash, where not only did they allegedly find a crashed UFO, they also found a dead alien occupant that the townspeople buried it in their cemetery. And today it's probably one of the only historical markers in America that actually admits to a UFO. And it talks about how supposedly an alien is buried in their cemetery somewhere.
We love it. Absolutely love it. Okay. So back to cowboys and aliens. And I'm sorry, cowboys and cryptids. I apologize. I just had to get
in there. Cowboys and aliens.
Yeah. I didn't like the movie all that much. You know something funny? I got to tell this story because I just think it's so funny about the movie Cowboys and Aliens. When Noe and I wrote that book, we had a couple of different reporters call and ask us for interviews about us. And I think the first one was the Huffington Post. And they were just trying to ask us. They were like, well, is the movie accurate? And we wanted to be like, well, no kidding, it's not accurate. It's just a movie based on a comic book. It's not supposed to be accurate. But we were like, no, it's not accurate to the story. So they kind of made that their headline, and it was, UFO researchers say Cowboys and Aliens not accurate. And it was kind of like we were complaining about the movie, which we weren't, you know. So that was my first lesson to be really careful what I say in front of reporters. And what was so funny was next, a lady from the Albuquerque Journal called me. She wanted to interview me about the book as well. And I was actually complaining to her about the Huffington Post. And I said, yeah, that Huffington Post, they twisted my words and made it sound like I said the Cowboys and Aliens movie wasn't accurate and I didn't like it. And, you know, she laughed, oh, yeah. And so funny, I see the paper, I see the Albuquerque Journal. She does the exact same thing. It says, author says Cowboys and Aliens not accurate.
Well, you don't really think the media would twist anybody's words, do you?
Oh, I would think the media wants what's best for us. Heavens, no.
Who would imagine the media twisting words to sell more coffee?
Someone passed the word around at the very end that says house doors are down or something. Something crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, but so back to the dinosaurs. I thought that I would only, you know, I thought it would be kind of a tiny little sequel to the Cowboys and Aliens book. I didn't anticipate finding so many cowboy and cryptid related articles. And actually, I found so many. I have enough material, I kid you not, for 10 books. And so far, I've written three. I've got Cowboys and Saurians is the first one, because Saurians is an antiquated term for dinosaurs or reptiles, which just had, you know, your basic dinosaur giant lizard stories. The second book is called Cowboys and Saurians Ice Age, and in that one I branched out into like megafauna, like mammoths and glyptodons and saber-toothed tigers. You know, so it wasn't just dinosaurs that people claimed to see. You know, there were a lot of mammoth sightings in Alaska. And what really might surprise you is if you had to guess what area of the United States would, or North America in general, if you had to guess where they would be sighting saber-toothed tigers, where would most of you guess?
Pacific Northwest.
That's a good guess, yeah. I would kind of guess up around there and up into Canada or something. Anybody
right.
else have their kind of where they think they would be sighted?
Alaska.
Yep, I would
I
think
know.
That, too.
I don't know. I've watched too many Beastmaster movies. I'm thinking more towards the desert or something.
Yeah.
We're dying
to
know,
did
John.
You say
come
about
on.
Did you say something about the desert velvet?
No, I did.
You said the
I
desert?
I did. I've been watching too much Beastmaster movies where him, like, hanging out with the beasts and the tigers and all that.
You're right. You're right. The highest
wow.
concentration of saber-toothed
wow.
tiger sightings come from Mexico and New Mexico, of all places. And there's
oh,
not
wow.
a lot of them. You know, in terms of cryptids, you know, there's certain
Go
types of cryptids, you know. Yeah. You know, like Bigfoot, obviously, a lot of sightings. A lot of sightings of plesiosaur-type monsters on lakes. Not a lot of saber-toothed tiger sightings, but again, most of them they see either in New Mexico or Old Mexico. And I found a really cool story about a Wild West showman named Colonel Idaho Bill Pearson, who claimed that he actually captured a live saber-toothed tiger in Mexico, and he transported it through the United States. And there's a pretty good credibility trail to this story, because several reporters in different states wrote articles about how they saw Colonel Pearson and his big mystery cat that had these big teeth, you know, like a saber-toothed tiger. So there were multiple witnesses, and Pearson was going to take it to a zoo in Washington, D.C., but it escaped, of course, before he could get it there.
No,
that was a really, yeah. But that was a fun story to research, because it was encouraging. You know, Colonel Pearson was a real man. There were lots of witnesses. And in fact, Colonel Pearson even met one of the presidents. I can't remember which one it was, but he gave the president a gift of some grizzly cubs. But he was definitely, you know, a legitimate animal dealer, you know.
Now, was this in the photographic era, or was this prior to that?
This would have been in the photographic era, but they never took a picture of the saber-toothed tiger, of course.
Darn. Yeah, it's probably hard to get him to hold still for a portrait.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably was camera shy, you know. I don't
yeah.
blame him.
Yeah.
I used to be that way.
Yeah. Those flashes really bother them. Mm-hmm.
No, you know what's funny? So probably second to the Tombstone Pterodactyl, the second most famous cowboy dinosaur encounter is the Ceratosaurus of the Arctic Circle. And the Ceratosaurus, for anyone listening who doesn't remember what kind of dinosaur that is, basically looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, except for it has a horn on its nose, so it's got a really neat look to it.
Oh,
wow. Yeah, 1908, of all places, in the Arctic Circle in the Yukon, people claimed, in fact, a priest was one of the primary witnesses, claimed to see a Ceratosaurus. And unlike a lot of these dinosaur articles, where maybe there was one or two articles, they wrote about this Ceratosaurus from 1907 to 1927. I mean, that's a 20-year period. So either the writers of the stories really just wanted to run with it, or people might have actually been seeing a dinosaur in the Arctic Circle. And as strange as that sounds, scientists, you know, for a long time we thought that dinosaurs, because they're reptiles, would be cold-blooded. But a lot of scientists have actually theorized that there were some dinosaurs that may have been warm-blooded. So it's a lot of interesting aspects to that story.
Okay. I would say so. Well, is this an aquatic animal? You know, when I think about the desert, or when I think about the Arctic Circle, I wouldn't think there'd be a lot of places to hide, to stay cryptid. You know, that's why I thought Pacific Northwest would be forested and mountainous and terrain that you couldn't identify an animal in. But
yeah,
I wonder where do they hide in the Arctic Circle?
Good. I think it was like a forested area of the Yukon that kind of had some trees and foliage it could probably hide in. And the reason I brought it up is you were talking about photographs, and allegedly they did get a photograph of it. And I did some research to see, you know, in 1907, could you actually take a photo? Because I used to have a girlfriend who did tintype photography as a business/hobby. And, you know, I knew how much effort it took to do a tintype, you know, because you have to sit perfectly still. It takes a lot of setup. But I did some research, and they had a Kodak Brownie camera that actually did use film.
This is 1907?
Yep, 1907. So I think
people made their own postcards in 1907. That was definitely in the photographic era, and that was a big industry. So, yeah, they would have been able to take photographs, no problem.
Yeah, of course, nobody can find that photograph today, but allegedly it was taken.
Hold still, big fella.
Yeah.
Right. Come out blurry.
Wow.
But the Ceratosaurus is a really good one, because I think I could have been a lawyer, because I can always argue the pros and the cons, or the fors or the against. And there's a lot for the Ceratosaurus, and there's a lot against it. So what we have to remember about you know, a story from 1907 is, let's say the author of the story is totally making it up. They're gonna give their dinosaur characteristics that were popular at that time. And this is a problem that a lot of people have with the Ceratosaurus story is, in 1907, it was really popular to think that the bipedal or theropod dinosaurs that walk on two legs, they were portrayed like kangaroos. Paleontologists at that time thought that they would have walked and kind of bounded around like kangaroos. And if you look at dinosaur artwork from that time period by Charles Knight, people like that, they are portrayed very much like kangaroos. And the problem with the Ceratosaurus story is, the witnesses claim they saw it bounding around like a kangaroo. And today, you know, that's totally discredited. You know, today we think of dinosaurs like Jurassic Park. They walk forward-leaning with their tail in line with their body. So in that regard, that really hurts the story. But by the other token, it has something kind of going for it, which is really unusual. And they claimed that the Ceratosaurus had bits of hair on it. And back in 1907, no one would have ever claimed a dinosaur would have hair on it. That was not a theory at the time.
It'd be like a lizard without
hair. Exactly. Yeah, but today, you know, scientists do think that some dinosaurs had maybe not hair, but feathers that could have looked like hair. So I think that's very interesting, because to me, if you were going for full credibility on your story and you were making it up, you definitely would not give it hair. You know, that would really throw it out of the realm of credibility. So it's just these stories are maddening because you can find so many things for and against them.
Sorry, Gillette.
Yeah.
I use shit myself, but that's okay.
That's right.
You know,
and what is
John,
this story?
I've got something on in conversations I've had with Lyle Blackburn. And Lyle has written a number of books on cryptids. He wrote the original Lizard Man book. He wrote the folk monster books, which were Boggy Creek. And he bought that for myself
for Christmas, by the way.
Which one?
Nice.
The Folk Monster by Lyle Blackburn.
Yeah, and what Lyle said is when he would go through article after article after article, and he would see even corroborating articles in different, you know, close to each other newspapers, they were just simply wrong. It's like they got a story in one town and they just ran with it. They just ran the same story in another town. And he said he had to be very careful on how he interpreted stories from local newspapers because they could just be crazy wrong. Or they could come out in the most amazing places. Like you sent me an article on the South Carolina Lizard Man that came from a newspaper out in the Midwest. And I thought, how strange.
Yeah.
And it also appeared in California in the, what was that, some town, the Democrat. And just, it's
the
like
Woodland,
amazing.
Yeah, Woodland Daily Democrat.
That's right. And these articles just seem to pop up, and they, you know, they have some elements of truth that we're familiar with because I know that for Lizard Man, I retyped every one of those newspaper articles, so I kind of know what's in the Lizard Man portfolio there. But these articles, they're just sometimes they're amazing. And I mean, maybe they're correct. Maybe they're not. But it's as an author and a researcher and a historian, because I think that really describes your role, it's hard to tell if the article is real or not, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wait a minute, John. Are you saying that sometimes newspapers print stuff that they just made up? Oh, that's
no.
That would just be impossible.
Yeah, I am. Like, I don't know back then
they did it.
I mean, they get this crap from everywhere. But
well, I guess what you'd have to do, you'd have to have a slow news index that you'd look at. You'd look at the rest of the stories in the newspaper, and you'd have to determine, was this a slow news week? And if it is, and you start seeing more and more of these fantastic stories, then you can figure, okay, well, they had to fill something on the pages, so they just kind of pluck this story out of air. But if it's a busy news day, where there's lots of real things going on, and then you see an article about it, that would increase my credibility.
I love that thought, and I had never actually thought of it from that perspective before. So now I really want to go back and look at some of these newspapers in full and see which days those occurred on. That is an excellent point.
Yeah, like sure if they announce a discovery of a cryptid, I don't know, like the day after Pearl Harbor, then, you know, that would say to me, oh, they really have something going on here.
That's a good thought, Trey. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know the Lyle told
John
me that,
brought up the.
What did I do?
Oh, I was going to say,
what
since
you
brought
do?
Up the lizard, you brought up the
what
Lizard Man, the 1892 Lizard Man article. Something that I did at least think that was really interesting about that article, that was maybe it's just coincidence or maybe we can call it corroboration, but the 1987 Lizard Man sightings, they found tracks in the mud, and I think they were about 14 to 15 inches long. And what I thought was really interesting is in the 1892 article, they also found tracks measuring exactly 14 inches long, which it's just odd that they have the exact same measurements in the same state with the same type of cryptid, only just 100 years apart.
it's such a shame that, that little town that it was in has since evaporated.
Bishopville.
It's now a a real estate development. It's a shame because there was a little drug store there where they had the cast, you know, exhibited, and I called the Berkeley County, South Carolina Library, and they said, we don't have any records of that town, but we know it was there, and then it just kind of went away, and it became a real estate development. I mean, some library you have, Berkeley County, South Carolina, the home of Somerville. And I mean, it's like, what's going on? You keep no records of towns. You keep no records of these little small newspapers that hang out in there. That would have been, John, that would have been the greatest thing would have been to have had some corroboration from a local newspaper and a picture of that cast in the window. That, John, wouldn't that have been great to have?
Yeah.
Well, we didn't get it. Thank you, Berkeley County Library. And don't revoke
my
borrower's card.
That's what's so maddening is every single one of these stories, you can find pros and cons for each one of them, and it's really hard to know what to believe. So another one that's like this, where I can find a lot of pros and cons, is it took place in an underwater. Well, not an under. It was a cave in Arkansas. I think it's called Mammoth Cave. And Mammoth Cave is one of those caves that has underground rivers flowing through it. And it talked about how a man named I can't remember the man's name, but there were these people from Idaho. The point is they were from Idaho, and they went to Arkansas, and they toured the caves. And they claimed that they saw a plesiosaurus in the underground river of the cave. Now, what I didn't like about this story is it reminded me a lot of Journey to the Center of the Earth, which has the famous scene where they take the raft on the water, and they see the plesiosaur in the underground ocean. You know, it really reminded me of that. And the story did come out after that book had been written, so it certainly could have been a copycat story. But what I thought was so funny, so I researched the name of the witness, which, I mean, I can't remember the names of all the witnesses. It's in my book, but the point is I researched this witness that was from Iowa visiting, you know, Mammoth Cave in Arkansas. I found out he was real. He is a very well-documented individual who dealt in cattle. And he was, in fact, in Arkansas. There were records of him in Arkansas at the time of the story to do some sort of cattle transaction. So it's one of those things where I learned he was a real man. He was in Arkansas when the story took place. But, I mean, who's to say he just didn't make up a crazy story for the folks back home in Idaho? You know, it's just, who can say?
But what would his motive be? Could he sell more real estate if he had the interesting story? Or did he just, like, have a great sense of humor and thought this would be fun?
I imagine it's the latter. And, I mean, the problem with us is, I mean, of us, I mean, everybody who lived in, you know, 1890, whenever, is dead now. You can't really know them or get a gauge on how they were, and I would think a lot of these people just thought that it was funny to make up a wild story and get it printed in the newspaper. But it, again,
right,
it's just hard to say if you didn't actually meet anyone from that era.
It's hard enough to get real news printed in a local newspaper, much less crazy news anymore.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
When I had the last Georgia Bigfoot Conference, the Clayton Tribune, I went and I contacted him 10 days before the event and said, where's the story in the picture that you took? Oh, we forgot to put that in the newspaper. I'm sorry. We'll put it in there next week. I said, but the event's the next week. I mean, whatever. You know, and then they did. They politely put it in there that next Friday with the event on Saturday. And nope, that didn't do any good. But, yeah, it's like – the news, you got to watch out for these newspapers and these internet news sources. They're all, I mean they all need to get a job writing for Conan O'Brien. You know, I mean, they do a great job. Call themselves journalists. Gee, I'm sorry, John.
apologize.
Oh yeah, what were we talking about? Were we talking about lizard man or pterodactyls or?
We were talking about Arkansas.
Oh,
and journey
Arkansas.
To the center of the earth with scientists.
Yeah, that's again that story. It's just too fantastic of a story because it claims that these guys actually traveled through the Mammoth Cave River on a raft and they saw a plesiosaur and they shot at it with their gun, and it just seems a little too exciting, you know. seems like a made up story.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So now we've talked about Mammoth Cave. And Mammoth Cave, by the way, has a really big reputation for hiding Bigfoot. It does.
Oh, really? Tell us about that a little bit, because I'm intrigued.
Well, what I've heard, if Tony Pelosi was on here, he could tell you all about it. But he told us about it, that a lot of times, one reason you don't see a lot of Bigfoot in the wintertime is because they go underground into cave systems, where it's arguably warmer. And one place that they go is in Mammoth Cave, and that's how they can travel from, you know, Virginia to Arkansas, because they know those caves. I mean, you couldn't get me to go into Mammoth Cave on something that wasn't a guided tour. I'd be petrified. See Lizard Man and see Bigfoot. That'd be too frightening. You don't know what's in those caves. And I don't either, and I don't want to find out. But that's kind of the deal, is that, you know, there are a lot of underground cave systems in the United States where supposedly Bigfoot and Lizard Man can travel. Lizard Man, not so much, because there are some issues with that I've got in Lizard Man Companion, the book, which is finally going to rear its ugly head the 1st of February. I had to do some more research. But, yeah, that's the kind of thing, like, you know, when you have swamp creatures. John, have you dealt much with swamp creatures?
Not a whole – just the Lizard Man article, and that's – well, dinosaur-type swamp creatures, that's about it.
Right. I mean, I've got some pretty good evidence that you can correlate Lizard Man sightings in general – with drought and high heat. There were four periods in the last century that had that, and every one of them had talk of Lizard Man sightings. So, again, I'd say that's some fairly scientific research. I mean, Dr. Trey, don't yell at me. You're a scientist, and I know that. And Velvet, don't yell at me. And
what is the hypothesis around drought and high heat?
Have drought and high heat, you have Lizard Man sightings. 1910. And I went back to check records. Yes, during 1910, there were droughts and high heat. In 87 was a miserably hot summer with very little rain. And in 88, end of 87, and the beginning of 88, here comes the Lizard Man. And then there were sightings out there in, like, the early 50s, I believe. John, I feel it's like it's in my book somewhere, and I haven't read that chapter in a while. But it seems like you can correlate. There were four periods of drought plus high heat in the summer, and you can correlate those with periods when lizard men were seen, supposedly because when the swamps would dry up I don't know if anybody much knows this, but there's a very tender balance and relationship between rivers and the ocean. And when inland rivers drop, that means salt water pushes itself up toward the inland. And I heard this from several of the old timers in Bishopville. And when it does, it pushes lizard men, because they don't like salt water. That's what they said. They said they don't like salt water, so it pushes them up here towards Skateboard Swamp. It's the main
Dr. John's got a Rosetta Stone, so he can understand what lizards can tell him. So he's gifted like that.
Okay, that's right. But anyway, that's what some of the old-timers told me. And Devin
Devin did a marvelous, marvelous documentary for the Lizard Man Festival. Devin, you remember that from last year?
Oh yeah, that was awesome.
Well, it really was a good documentary, and it seemed as though there seemed to be some conditions when Lizard Man was more prevalent than when it wasn't prevalent, because I know that you had the lizard people of Los Angeles that some people laugh and snicker at, but there seems to be enough information and detail that there might have been something about it. I mean, what do you think? It was just all hogwash, the lizard people of Los Angeles, or do you think there could have been something for real about it? In other words, and if it wasn't seen by, I'll just say this, if it wasn't seen by cowboys and cowgirls, it might have been seen by more recent people. So go to it, buddy. What do you think?
Yeah, there's got to be something to it, because so many different people have told similar stories at different times too. So I think there's definitely something behind the legend. And, you know, one of the periods of time where a lot of the research was done was during the Depression. So I think when people had, you know, they kind of had big problems to deal with, like right now, today. So it's kind of a diversion for people. They wanted to look into this, and they were really curious about it at that time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's something to it. There's also, when you're talking about lizard people, and this is a very vague reference that I found, but that there were underground caves and underground cities in the Mount Shasta area, which, John LeMay, you may or may not know, that's in very northern California. And there seems to be a lot of confusion as to, well, has anyone really explored that area? And the answer is patently no, because a lot of explorers are afraid because too many people go missing.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it because I watch lizard people all the time growing up on Land of Lost. So, yeah, I grew up watching lizard people. So, yeah, I believe it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, but the point is, there are some areas that we really don't want to go explore because they're just dangerous. I mean, I think
either that or the lizard people don't want you there. That's their home.
Well,
yeah,
I don't
blame them.
And Papa Stroh, I'm getting ready to tell that exact story about
you stalker you stalking lizard people. What's wrong with you?
I have a good
friend. They got feelings too, you know. They got feelings too.
Well, they do, and what I can tell you is a good friend of mine from Canada, Robin Sun Moon, she is an Indian up there, and her father...
You think? No.
Her grandfather fought in the Vietnam War, and he and his best friend came back and told the same story, that when they were out there in those jungles were deep and dark, and they were told, if you see lizard people, shoot to kill. Now... And all those young boys said, well, what do you mean? And they said, you'll know. And that's all they would say. And one day, a number of them were on patrol, and they were walking back and forth through those marshy wilderness down there. And all of a sudden, they came into a clearing, and there were two lizard people, lizard men. I mean, you know, the 7 foot tall with a long tail, looks like the Geico lizard, just standing there. And then those lizard people took off running.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they did, and they went to what the troops called the biggest cave they had ever seen, and this was actually officially discovered, and it's now a tourist attraction, in 1991. Well, anyway, what happened is they followed the lizard people. There were about 50 of them. They followed them, and they get down there, and all of a sudden they're surrounded by about 40 lizard people. They opened up their machine guns and whatever they had, and they just mowed them down. And they, you know, they got back to base. And
oh, that was nice.
They told
of them.
What happened.
That was nice of them to mow them down, and they're in their territory. They're mowing them down. I mean, come on, what? Who does that?
This is a story that was relayed to me by Robin Sun Moon. Both her grandfather and his friend told them both separately. So anyway, they got back, and the commander said, as you know,
still
that
wrong.
Is top secret. What?
It's still wrong. if they're in their territory and they're probably wondering what the heck they're doing in their home, and they're just mow them down, the lizard people. Is that what you're saying? Oh my God!
That is what has been reported from Vietnam, and Vietnam is a very dangerous place, and our troops were sent into the worst possible environment. You know, so but John LeMay, what I'm saying is,
why they send them? Why they send them there though? I got a question. Why they send them there? That's not part of the
because
war.
Because of the Bay of Pigs, and you know, but the whole point is, you know, there are anomalistic creatures all over the world that have been sighted by cowboys and Indians. The Tombstone Thunderbird? That's a great story. It'd be hard to doubt that, really. All right, John, I just wanted to kind of corroborate the fact that in other cultures, there are dangerous cryptids that have been seen in Australia. Oh, my God. Gary Opitt, in his book, Australian Cryptozoology, and I've interviewed Gary, he said when the British came here, this had to be the most terrifying place in the world because there were all kinds of weird animals. And Gary's part of the Australian Academy of Science. And even Gary admits to this. So, I mean, it's like, what do you say? I mean, it just brings a little credence to some of the stories that we have heard. What say you, John?
I'm glad you brought up Australia, because Australia, when it comes to remnant dinosaurs, is totally different from any other spot in the world. Now most cryptozoologists, you know, when you talk about the remnant dinosaurs, like the one in Africa, Mokele Mbembe or Loch Ness Monster, you know, the theory is that it's a surviving dinosaur that, you know, just somehow survived across all the years. But Australia, I can't remember how many witnesses, probably at least a dozen, have claimed that when they see a dinosaur out in the outback, they have also seen them either vanish into thin air or walk into portals, as though they're not really remnant dinosaurs who survived, but they're dinosaurs who somehow went through a time slip, which I think is really interesting because that's the only spot in the world that I know of where that's consistently what they see.
Now, where have you heard this? This is news to me. I don't doubt it. I know all about portals. I mean, you
luckily,
and I were just talking.
I'm
just going to say you and I were talking day before yesterday about Ambrose Bierce, one of the greatest minds since Shakespeare. And Ambrose Bierce wrote a little short story called "The Problem with Crossing a Field" about a guy that was just there and he vanished. He obviously went into a portal, obviously, and portals do exist. Scientists have proven that they do, and they haven't really. Well, they haven't come out with any research about going in and out of portals, but I'm sure some scientists somewhere have done that already. But portals they're kind of a phenomenon, and they're not so unreal that I believe they exist. And then here you have Ambrose Bierce writing about it, and what was that, John? Like 1890?
I think so, yeah. And then he disappeared in Mexico in the 1910s at some point, and nobody knows what happens to him.
All I know is that he and a buddy of his went down there. They hung out with Pancho Villa. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're gone. I mean, you know, hanging out with Pancho Villa, him getting some Americans, especially a famous one, probably not the kind of people he would just go murder. I mean, you know, that they would be too valuable to him otherwise. But, yeah, portals. And so you're saying in Australia there is evidence.
So the one who writes
there
about
are dinosaurs
it, Australia's,
that vanish into portals.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he's Australia's premier cryptozoologist. His name is Rex Gilroy. That's Gilroy, Rex Gilroy. So if y'all are interested in Australian cryptozoology, just Google that name and find his books. They're excellent.
Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to say
check it out.
Gary Opitt would take issue to that because he thinks he is Australia's greatest cryptozoologist. But
well,
maybe,
suit
maybe,
it
maybe
I'm going to read the other guy. Yeah. I'm all some Gilroy now.
Yeah, he's got good stuff.
All right.
just a little note there. Gary Opitz thinks
he's the stuff. Is it a picture book?
No, it's a really good.
There are
it's a really good book.
It.
I should
pictures in it.
I've got a. I've got
so
a
we don't need crayons, right?
Day.
We don't need crayons
no.
to color in the cryptid.
No,
okay,
well,
cool.
you could, but Stop. You could, but still, it's you know, there's a lot, you know, going on now. Dr. Trey Donaway, this makes me want
yes.
to ask you a question.
Oh, here we go.
You made a remark to me, and it was a bit of an evasive remark. When I first confided in you about cryptids and Bigfoot and everything, and I felt kind of weird, but I felt like you gave off the aura that, you know, it's okay to tell you what I know. And I did. And I said, I know people have seen strange things. And then you commented back to me an even more cryptic statement. You said, John, something to the effect of, we all have signed confidentiality agreements for being in operating rooms. And you wouldn't believe what I've seen. And I'm not asking you to tell us anything, but isn't it true that strange things do happen in operating rooms? Is this a kind of a yes or no question?
Well, of course strange things happen in operating rooms all the time, but usually it's not a mystery of what why they happen or what the nature of the event is.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But there are things that we don't know about. And so, I mean, just recently they discovered some massive cave in British Columbia. And this is real news. It's not fake. It's an area that was usually snow-covered. Snows are fading away. They saw a big opening from a helicopter, and it turns out to be possibly the largest cave ever found in Canada. And you kind of
nice.
Think, well, you know, we've been around for a long time, so there's nothing new under the sun. Well, not true. Here's a mammoth cave that they
yeah.
discovered. It's called Sarlacc Pit. And it's interesting. They call it Sarlacc because it was from because of a Star Wars movie. It's some in the movie. I can't remember the exact nature of it, but it refers to something that resembled something in a Star Wars movie. But the fact
right.
is an enormous cave, possibly the largest in Canada. And if there's a mm-hmm. micro environment there and it has strange animals, then are they cryptozoology specimens or are they just zoology specimens that no one has known about?
That's
so
right.
What I
Star
find fascinating,
the creatures in Star Wars, right. You're right.
Yeah. So what I find fascinating is that when we talk about cryptozoology, instead of
mm-hmm.
just rolling eyes saying, well, those are fantastic inventions of man, no, it could be real. Now, it's nice to have evidence that supports it. I mean, that's ideally what you want, but we don't know everything, and we haven't seen everything under the sun. So there's always a possibility for something that we don't have an explanation for to have a real live explanation, and the answer is because the cryptozoology specimen actually exists as a zoological specimen, and there's no crypto about it. It's just that it's never been described or seen before. Why not?
Well, I would.
Right.
I would love to know.
I can't tell you now, but you called a hotline.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to know what drones found when they flew them in there. Or if they did, I mean, that would be just really, really, really interesting. This is exactly what happened to that cave that they accidentally found in Vietnam. Now it's one of Vietnam's biggest, one of their biggest tourist attractions. And that's the cave where the servicemen were confronted by the lizard people, according to several of the servicemen that are over there. And then, boom, you know. So
they mowed them down. I can't get over that.
I would, I would naturally doubt lizard people traveling in caves unless they had echolocation or they could somehow see in the dark.
Right.
I think most
nocturnal,
most
right?
caves are habitable to the point where there's still light. And once you get beyond where there's no light, unless you bring in artificial light, you're not gonna be able to travel very well in it. So, you know, from a reasoning standpoint, unless they got echolocation, can see in the dark, or have some ability to see that everyone else can't see, I don't know about that. But that's not to say there aren't cave creatures. That's their micro niche, and they're just waiting to be discovered.
I know you're going to prosecute me now when I tell you that the lizard people in Bishopville always had red eyes, which meant that they could see in the dark. And now you can take out a gun, just like Billy the Kid, and shoot me, Trey.
No, perhaps they had infrared radiation coming out of those red eyes, and then they could see an infrared light spectrum, and we can't do that without goggles. So who knows? Why not?
Maybe they all had that camp by a campfire, smoked a few, and just made their own light.
Yeah,
lost
those red eyes. But it would be quite an evolutionary advantage for somebody to be able to see in the dark, especially a predator. I mean, wow, what a great advantage that is. You could go back into the dark recesses of a cave and hunt successfully because you could see what other creatures couldn't see.
That's right.
But I don't know.
That was a very
good talking point. Now, I tell you what, John, you know you've got a tough crowd here, and I think you've done an amazing job. Do you have any more wonderful stories you'd like to share with us?
Well, you brought up swamp monsters, and that rung a bell of a swamp monster story that I found that I enjoyed, and I think is probably true. There's a story about a group of men. They were out in a swamp kind of in the vicinity of Lake Catherine by New Orleans, Louisiana. And they claimed that they saw this animal in the swamp. And they said it looked like a big giant crocodile, except for it had horns coming out of its shoulders. And one thing about these articles, it's always fun to try and guess what kind of a dinosaur they saw, or maybe what kind of a dinosaur the reporter was making up. But I looked through picture books whenever this happens, you know, because that's pretty odd, a crocodile with horns coming out of its shoulder. And I found the exact dinosaur that matches. I can't quite pronounce the name. It's something like Dinosuchus. It's one of those names that's really hard to spell, but it is actually looks precisely like a crocodile, but it's got horns coming out of its shoulders. And the story in the newspaper article, I can't remember the date because there's so many of them, but the story was just that, you know, it was pretty simple. They saw this thing raise up out of the swamp, and so they shot at it, and the gunshots scared it away. And the story got more intriguing to me when I learned who the shooter was. The shooter was a sheriff named G.B. Shaw. I do remember that. I remember that name. And Shaw was kind of a renowned marksman for his time. And the reason why to me it makes the story more credible is so if I'm a reporter and I'm making up a story and I'm using G.B. Shaw, the great marksman, why then, you know, sky's the limit if it's fiction. Why didn't he shoot the monster between the eyes and it died and, it, you know, it's a big story. But really it's kind of anticlimactic. They see the monster in the reeds. They shoot at it swims away. That's kind of boring as far as a made-up story goes. And a lot of times the boring stories turn out to be true. And again, the animal they saw was very specific. So that's kind of how I sometimes gauge whether or not these stories might be true is, you know, unlike the story I was talking about in Arkansas where they build a raft and they go down the river and they see a plesiosaurus. I mean, that's kind of fantastical. And again, a lot like Journey to the Center of the Earth. But you know, again, you know, this one just seemed kind of anticlimactic, and it seems like to me it could have happened. And they, again, the animal they saw was very specific, and a Dino, again, I can't remember the name, but Dinosuchus isn't a really popular dinosaur like a T-Rex or a Plesiosaurus or something. You know, there's just a lot of very telling things about that little story, I feel like.
Well, I think, John, you're right. If you have a story that's not so sensational that it wouldn't sell a bunch of news copy, but it's just a relatively factual account of an encounter that's unknown, and that's all it is to the reporters, that would ring more true than, you know, we built a raft and then we coaxed a dinosaur to the surface using marshmallows and you know, that's just too crazy. But it's something that you saw something, you had a good picture of it. If the guy's a sharpshooter, you'd figure out he had good eyesight, so he could describe it accurately. And they took a shot at it, and it got away. And you know, that end of story. Well, I'd say, well, I wonder what that is. I wonder what that was. I'd believe that before I'd believe the Arkansas dinosaur.
I'm glad we're on the same page on that. That makes me feel better.
Okay, I've got another one to add that might be one page over. It's in the lizard man literature. And there were three businessmen who liked to go out and run. And they would do training for, you know, 26-mile marathon. And so there's a trail that goes out from Tucson out in the desert. And when it's not blistering hot, a lot of marathoners actually use that trail to go out. It's 13 miles out, 13 miles back. It's kind of a neat thing to say that you've done. Well, three businessmen go out there, and they get to the apex of the trail. They're getting ready to turn around. And from behind a rock is a lizard man, and it comes out. And it growls at them.
Not lizard man.
And they turned around and sprinted, and the lizard man obviously was not interested in following them. But they're three credible businessmen from Tucson. And, you know, we have their names, and, John, you're a step ahead of me. I haven't checked who they are. But I would bet that's a kind of a boring story. It's like we go out there 13 miles out, and we're kind of in the desert, and no one's around, and well, we run into a lizard man. Okay, let's get out of here.
Maybe you
now,
want
John,
some lawyers.
Maybe. but I mean, John, does that kind of sound like one of your boring stories? They go out there, they find it, and they run like hell to get away from it.
Exactly. And I mean, a made-up story usually has beginning, middle, and end. You know, it has like a little tiny story structure to it, you know, and real life, as we all know, often does not.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with going on with UFOs now. I mean, forever people would say, "Oh yeah, I saw a UFO," and they'd make up these fantastic stories. And now we're getting on mainstream media, we're getting reports of things hovering, you know, cigar shaped light ups in the sky, and they don't do anything other than just move rapidly. It's, mm-hmm. But it's not like we had lunch with the aliens. It's not fantastic stories. It's just that, well, this is not an aircraft or an airplane that we know of, and it's moving in ways that we can't even imagine with the technology that we have access to. But we didn't have any contact other than we saw this. That, to me, sounds like a real story rather than, you know, an alien abduction where it just gets more and more complicated and fascinating. And these, again, are credible witnesses. These are professional pilots for the military. If anything, they would probably be ridiculed by their peers, but yet the stories are now coming out that these have been suppressed for a long time. So what's with that?
Probably the aliens are upset for them stealing their press.
Could be.
Hey, yeah. Come on.
Could be.
You know what I mean?
So those to me ring of truth because they're not embroidered. It's a mm-hmm. short story. It's a short encounter that nobody can explain it, but yet there is documentation now and photographs and imagery that just can't be explained with today's technology. And unless there's some technological leaps that no one's aware of, it very well could be alien activity because you just don't know.
Too much of that good stuff they're smoking.
Yeah, could be.
With red eyes.
Yeah.
Well, John, back to Australia, I would like for you to please share some of those stories with me about dinosaurs vanishing. I mean, that's fascinating. And
I can't remember real specific ones. That's why I skimmed through Rex Gilroy's books about a year ago, and that's just kind of what I remember is his theory, more so than they survived millions of years, is that they slip in and out of these time portals, which is very unique to the cryptozoological theory. If you're interested,
living in another time stream.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I do plan on doing a. Oh, what was that, Velvet?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, I think I still don't know everybody's voices yet. I thought that was Velvet.
The one you just heard
maybe
was Velvet. The other one was Papa Stroh.
I would do charades, but you can't see me.
That's Papa Stroh. I'm done.
That is Papa Stroh. All right. Well, what I'd like to do, we've come to the point that I'd like to give every one of our co-hosts and panelists an opportunity to ask you a question. And I think this is always the most fun. And I'd like to do it in the following order. I have a reason for doing this. I'd like for Trey to ask the first one. Then I would like for Devin to ask the second one, Velvet to ask the third one, and Papa Stroh to conclude with, and I'll ask you, then I'll give you a comment or two, if I may, John. So Trey Donaway, what would you like to ask John LeMay, who has studied exhaustively cryptids and cowboys and Indians?
Has there ever been something that has been described as a cryptid that was later proven to bear out factually that it was a real entity?
Well, I can't think of – well, okay, the Okapi is a good example. The Okapi was seen for many years until one was finally captured, and then there was also, of course, the coelacanth, which should have died out millions and millions of years ago, and they caught one off the coast of Africa in the 1930s. So absolutely, yes.
Therefore, I would think, before you dismiss cryptids as just a pseudoscience, it just might be possible that people are describing something that truly does exist. There's just not enough evidence to support one way or the other. But if that evidence does present itself, then I'd say the cryptozoologist wins that match.
Yeah, and I absolutely do believe in the remnant dinosaur theory, just because of how many stories there's been across the ages, from cave paintings all the way up till today, of people claiming they saw dinosaurs long after they should have been dead. I'm just, skeptical of some of the articles due to their nature, but as far as just the idea of remnant dinosaurs goes, though, I absolutely believe.
I would like to give some supporting evidence. Because there was a man that was drummed out of the Royal Society of the British Royal Society of Scientists, because he went to Australia, and he claimed that he had found a nest of these animals that carried other animals inside of them, and could jump great distances and were very, very dangerous. He was readmitted when they discovered the kangaroo.
Yeah.
Kangaroo was totally misinterpreted in as like a fantasy creature. So, there's one. I just happen to know that came from my discussion with Gary Open, who's a good man. So, thank you, Trey. That was a very good question. The Amazing Velvet, What question do you have for John LeMay?
So, possibility of what would be more fascinating to actually get more evidence of a cryptid or an actual finding of a cryptid versus an actual capture of one or an actual capture of a Bigfoot? What do you think would be more prevalent to society?
Boy, probably the capture of Bigfoot, just because some people kind of like to get into the evolutionary theory that Bigfoot is some sort of offshoot. I mean, if they captured Bigfoot, they could finally just prove it was is some sort of other ape species or a prehistoric Gigantopithecus that somehow survived into the modern era. So I think maybe Bigfoot might be more revolutionary, although a dinosaur would be pretty revolutionary as well. It's either one.
Okay, thank you.
Devin, our man in Hollywood.
Yeah, I just was wondering. I just recently, not too long ago, found out about this legend of the Tokwitz. I don't think it's a cryptid. I think it's a spirit that apparently lives up in Mount San Jacinto, which is the big mountain out west of Los Angeles, out by Palm Springs in Indio, California. I'm just curious if you've ever heard of it before, or if you know anything about those. I guess they're Native American legends.
No, that one's totally new to me. I will say I heard about the underground reptilian city from the 1930s, though. I have heard of that, and Noe Torres and I are going to put that in our book about 1930s era UFO sightings. But yeah, never heard about that particular cryptid or entity or whatever it is.
Well, it's cool that you're including the lizard people. I'd love to, you know, chat more with you about that if you need any of my research that I've done, or if I find out more about this Tokwitz legend, I'm happy to share it with you too.
Oh, both of those would be awesome. I'd appreciate that. Absolutely, because I don't have anything on the underground reptilian city just yet. I just know it exists, and I know we're going to include it, so that would be a great help
John LeMay, I have a surprise for you. There's an entire chapter about it in the Lizard Man Companion.
I can just cut and paste. Okay, if you send me the document, I'm just going to cut and paste it.
You're my buddy. You can do whatever you want.
I'm just kidding.
I got all the stuff from the L.A. Times.
Awesome.
And it was out there, and, I'll send it to you tomorrow, and I hope you enjoy it. Yeah, you've been John LeMay has been so kind to share things with me. I can actually share something with him and help him a little bit, so it's great. I'm actually very glad to do that, John. And that was a good question, Devin. Now, Papa Stroh, you've got a two-parter. One is your question, and then one is my question to you. I've got a great idea. So, Papa Stroh, first of all, what would you like to ask John LeMay?
Two-part question. Put me on the spot here. Okay. I got a surprise for you then, because here's my question to first question, anyway. All right. First off, what do you think of all these attempted photographs of cryptids that have turned into really bad negative Polaroid picture types? And what's your theory on that? And also, do you think Anna Nicole is actually a cryptid?
Well, first of all, I'm sorry for mistaking you for Velvet earlier. I think it's, like I said, I'm still kind of getting used to everybody's voices after five or six shows or whatever. Okay, well, good. Some of those photographs are really great. One of the best photographs for people listening of a lake monster, Google the Sandra Manzi Lake Champlain photo. I believe it was from 1977. That looks very realistic of a plesiosaur coming out of the water.
Nice.
Yeah, so that is probably to me the best cryptid photo of all time, and she seems to be a very credible witness. But yeah, it's tough to say, you know, about these photographs. You know, you've always got pros and cons against them, like the famous Patterson Gimlin Bigfoot footage from 1967. You know, some people claim that the makeup artist who worked on Planet of the Apes made that suit and it was all a hoax. And then you've got really good arguments about why it's not a hoax. And then you've got some of the most famous pictures of all time, like the 1934 surgeon's photo of Loch Ness. You know, if I remember right, has been proven without a doubt it's a hoax. You know, which
that's
too bad.
That's 'cause you can't trust surgeons. Everybody knows that.
Yeah. Well, maybe you should do the photo hoax at some point. So yeah, I mean, there's good photos and there's bad photos. I guess that's all that can be said.
Yeah, that's true. So what about Anna Nicole? What's the scoop on her? You think she's a cryptid,
is
Bigfoot,
really,
Sasquatch?
Is she really dead?
Needs to shave or
what?
She's an alien.
I think she might be like Elvis, and she's not really dead, but that's, you know.
Yeah. I mean, who's to say a cryptid can't be a female, you know what I mean? There's female cryptids, right?
Well, actually the Bigfoot footage I just talked about was female, and it had breasts. If you look up the 1967 Bigfoot footage.
Knew it. Yes. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Papa Stroh was there with me when we celebrated the 50th anniversary of that footage in Kingsport, Tennessee at Bays Mountain Park. And that was a magical moment. We had a large cookie because nobody could figure out how to
have
mercy. Cake.
And the cookie was an actual cryptid, believe it or not. An actual cryptid cookie.
Listen, I mean, you talk about trying to make something good. That's right, Scooby Snacks. All right, Papa Stroh, that was a good question. Now, I've got a question for Papa Stroh that involves John LeMay. And I think you'll see why I wanted to ask last.
Okay.
The movie Cowboys and Aliens has come to light, and it's a pretty fantastical. Fantastical means more fantastic than fantastic. It's a pretty fantastical film. But John LeMay has a great background in cowboys and ghosts and UFOs and monsters. And I was going to ask if the three of us could get together and do a 30-minute discussion of the film, and if you could, as one of your Friday evening science fiction films, if you could do cowboys and UFOs, and then we could talk, and then after that, then we could play the podcast. Papa Stroh, would you be interested in sometime in the next 6 months, the three of us talking about cowboys and aliens?
Sure, yeah, I love the film. I really love the film. I'm a big Harrison Ford fan. So, yeah, it was great, definitely. Anytime.
Well, John LeMay, could you give us 30 minutes out of your busy schedule sometime in the next several months to talk about that film?
Always.
Pardon?
Always. And I mirror what he said. Harrison Ford is my favorite part of that movie, too. So.
Oh, let's face it, it's a pretty cool film. It really is. It does have its moments, and I just think it would be kind of a nice adjunct scary cast, and I think it would be a lot of fun for the Stroh Zone, and I think Dorothy would really enjoy this, Papa Stroh.
Dorothy.
She was tearing for the aliens, but you know what I mean. It's all good.
Well, of course. that's Dorothy. But I guess what I want to say, this has been a lot of fun. We've learned a lot. I got to share some things. John LeMay has shown that he's done a massive amount of research, and he is what I would truly call an expert in historical folklore. We'll call it historical folklore, and that, I think that's the best way to categorize
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I agree with
so,
that.
And John, I will send you tonight, I will send you the copy on the copy of that chapter. It has references.
Oh,
and it will be. It'll probably save you about a month
of research
cool.
and you can go do, you know, because more research needs to be done, and I think you're the man for it. You know, I'm just trying to keep my head above water here with projects and also with everybody. John LeMay introduced me to a fellow named William H. Cox II, who in 1990 was the absolute spitting image, dead ringer of Billy the Kid, and he created quite a stir out there in Lincoln, New Mexico. I've got him a Facebook page. I just need two more people to like it, and then we'll have enough to have a page name. Papa Stro, number first person to like it. Thank you, Papa. We appreciate it. But he's become kind of an interesting person. He had a lot of experiences that mirrored the same kinds of things that the real Billy the Kid had in 1879, 1880, and 1881. So it's really kind of a fascinating double-edged sword of what really happened versus what really, you know, what did happen a century and a half ago. A lot of similarities in their lives. Not saying that there's a reincarnation here, but I can say that it's a really great story, and he's a genuinely a nice person. I've had him on, I think, ScaryCast. I've had him on Pop Culture Stars, and we'll have him back again because he's a lot of fun. And he's got a great historical story, and I do like history. And John, I do want to say thank you for introducing me to Billy the Kid, William H. Cox. I mean, he's just a super fella, and we're trying to find some of the things out there and maybe complete them a little better than they have been to give a more accurate story of what all happened to him. So, John LeMay, thanks a lot for that great introduction about 6 weeks ago, and he and I've got a lot more to do. And if you want to take the Lizard Men of Los Angeles farther, and of course I'll put you in touch with Devin, because Devin knows. Devin, do you have a copy of that documentary, don't you?
I sure do.
Do you think you could get John LeMay a copy of it? I'm sure he'd probably like to see it.
I'd love to.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, it'll help you a month, probably 2 months, if you have John LeMay's documentary. And just please reference us and tell everybody that we were good guys and we wanted to help, because this kind
of
research is fun. It's not like...
I'm looking up Kilroy. I'm going to check out Kilroy, man. Thanks for referring me to him.
Gilroy. Gilroy with a G.
Gilroy.
Okay,
I was thinking the Sticks song, Kilroy. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hey, Papa
Mr. Roboto.
We'll see. Now, is Gilroy still alive?
I believe so. I think he is. I think he was kind of up there in years, if I'm remembering right. But I believe so.
Okay.
Awesome.
I'll see if I can track him down, Papa Stro, and when you have him on ScaryCast one night. That'd be kind
Please
of fun.
Let me know.
You'll
That'd be
the
great.
First to know. I couldn't do that one without you and Dorothy there. But anyway, I want to thank everybody. We've had a lot of fun, and this is what ScaryCast is about, and this is just the harbinger of great things to come for the year. We want to thank our guest co-host, Dr. Trey Donaway. Trey, it's always great to have you, and thank you for saving me there in the middle of the show. I appreciate that. You could have barbecued.
Nice to be here,
so
John.
I appreciate
Thank you.
It.
John, thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. Glad to have the amazing one, the amazing Velvet from beautiful Ravenel, South Carolina. And it is pretty
yes.
out there. Papa Stro, of course, from Emerald Isle. And Devin, our man in Hollywood. And, of course, tonight's featured guest from the UFO capital of the universe, Roswell, New Mexico, the one and only John LeMay. And, John, thanks for being with us. I hope all you listeners have enjoyed it. Just check us out, ScaryCast.com. It goes directly to our Facebook page. We'll have John back the first Monday of next month with another set of lively stories, and we'll be back next week. I don't know what the program is, but it'll be good. I promise that. So thanks to everybody for being with us on ScaryCast. It's always a lot of fun, and we'll see you next week on the scariest hour and a half in internet radio, the one and the only ScaryCast. Thanks, everybody.
Good night.
Alrighty.
Good night.
Nighty-night.